Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey guys, this is Erica Ramirez, senior editor at Billboard, and with me for the millionth time and more to come, Stephen Horowitz.
Hey.
That's all you ever give me.
What's up? What's going on?
All right, that's a lot better. So what happened this week in R&B and rap? What's the first thing that you think of as far as what happened this week? Like, what comes up in your head?
I mean, the thing that I wrote for .com about Mary J. Blige's album leaking is yes. The first thing that comes to mind. Also because I have been incessantly listening to it.
Yes.
The London Sessions.
You let me know that the London Sessions leaked, which is a month, almost close to 2 months ahead of schedule. It comes out November 24th in the UK and like December 2nd, I want to say.
December 2nd,
in the US. So yeah, that's pretty far from now.
Yeah.
Which is a little, I mean, I guess it would be nerve-wracking if it wasn't Mary J. Blige. What do you think it will affect her sales or the rollout?
Well, I don't think it'll affect the rollout at all because they released the video for Right Now, which is the lead single produced by Disclosure. You know, I can also tell you who wrote it, but
look at you. Okay.
Sam Smith and Jimmy Napes. But they premiered the video last week, and they obviously have a marketing plan in place, and they can't tamper with it. I don't think it would actually benefit her to move up the record. Like, the record's going to come out and do whatever, and I don't think they've given it enough time to gestate and kind of implement that marketing plan. That being said, for an artist like Mary J. Blige, I think, I think time really doesn't matter. Like, she, over the past few years, her album sales have kind of been waning. Mm-hmm. She came out with a Think Like a Man 2 soundtrack, which she did kind of on her the entirety of...
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, it was a Mary J. Blige album disguised as a soundtrack, and you right. wouldn't know it unless either you A, saw the movie, which I don't know how many people did.
Right, shots fired. Already
B,
shots fired.
Or a Mary J. Blige fan and
right.
went looking for that soundtrack. I think it sold something like 8,700 copies in its first week, which is really not good for a Mary J. Blige album.
Right, but no one knew that it was a Mary J. Blige album.
Right,
unless,
exactly.
Like you said.
That being said, you know, last year she came out with A Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
In October. And that also didn't really sell that well. I think it debuted in the 30s somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's really not good, especially for an artist, a vanguard artist like Mary J. Blige.
Right. But you love the London Sessions.
The London Sessions is by far her best album since The Breakthrough, which was 2005. And since then, she's put out several albums.
She has, yes.
My Life, Part 2, Act 1.
Yeah. And Act 2, and yes.
she also put out Stronger with each tier. And Growing Pains.
I liked Growing Pains.
I liked
but
Growing
Pains,
But
that was
Pains
our first
too.
Happy Mary album, so I don't know how many people were excited about
I mean,
that, but I was a fan.
I mean, The Breakthrough was a Happy Mary album, too.
Yeah.
But, I think the quality of the record and how good it is going to pull people in. Like, that's the benefit of an album leak, that it kind of opens the door to an album for people who normally wouldn't listen to it. And the quality of it can really influence whether or not they're going to go and buy it and can really determine the impact of the record when it actually does come out. Like, we saw that with Beyoncé's 4. We saw
right.
that with A$AP Rocky's Long Live A$AP.
Right.
Which they both leaked almost a month or a month
yeah.
before. So
When I was listening to it, I think what stands out is there's a variety of both ballads and like dance songs, and they're both very strong. Like, I was nervous that it would be one or the other would be weaker, because she would probably be focused on the dance songs. Actually, I thought the ballads weren't going to be as strong, but I think they're super powerful ballads, which you had me reciting back to you on instant message. So what were the standout stuff from the album that people could look forward to?
I mean, the singles that were released so far are just really strong. All right. Therapy and Whole Damn Year and Right Now, which I just mentioned.
You love this album.
But there's a song in particular that really sticks out to me that Naughty Boy, I want to say, produced. It's called Pick Me Up. And it has a clarinet line, kind of like, you know how saxophone has become so ubiquitous in pop music over the past year or so? Things like Thrift Shop and Problem by Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
Well, Naughty Boy takes a clarinet and kind of mixes up the formula. And it is just such a fun and upbeat dance song that, like, Mary sounds happy. And the song doesn't have a lot of substance. It's about, she says, pick me up. Says something like, "Fly, pick me up, pilot, take me straight to the islet," which is such an English thing, which is the
wow,
best.
Okay.
But yeah, it's just really feel good. And I think when Mary is feeling good, she's really at her best, because she, you know, we don't like to hear Mary J. Blige hurt, and she hurts a lot on this album as well. But yeah, I mean, it's an album that is just, it's 12 tracks, it's really to the point.
Yeah.
And they really thought hard about all of these songs individually, and I think as a whole you can really see how the chemistry on all those tracks kind of was tied together by Mary. Like, she just feels comfortable in this particular setting.
I was gonna say, I'm not familiar, did she executive produce it? Who executive produced it?
I'm not sure who executive produced it. I want to say Kenji produced. I mean, like, Kenji, her husband.
Yes,
he always has a very strong involvement in her career. But I don't know if that's been made privy yet. I would assume Mary J. Blige.
Yeah, because I feel like it's very well sequenced also.
Right.
So that's a smart thing to do. So the thing that I keep thinking about for this week is all YMCMB stuff, where, like, The Weeknd kicked off with, like, a video of Drake storming back into a strip club and dropping his cash, which I hope someone else got and not him, because why not? And suppose because of Tyga's crew, but then also, like, Nicki and Drake's album is being pushed back till December. So are you sad being a Nicki Minaj fan?
I'm not sad.
I mean, it's like, what, it was supposed to come out November?
It was supposed to come out November 25th.
Yeah, so it's like a month after.
Almost, yeah. I'm not sad. I'm surprised, to be honest.
Very surprised.
I'm surprised because Anaconda is still doing really well
at
the charts, and that's what you want. I mean, I understand the whole methodology of putting out a single and getting a hit and then following up with another single, which she just did, the track with Wayne and Drake Chris Brown. But that song is clearly not going to do well in mainstream radio. It's not a mainstream song.
Yes, because as we learned, Drake and Wayne have not fucked Nicki Minaj, but they want to.
They definitely want to. They have a lot of fun things to say.
They want to.
No, but to that point, I'm just surprised that they put out a single in order to build up more momentum for the album. That's not really going to do that for this particular project.
So do you think they should have just, like, put it out as planned in November?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she's released albums in around Thanksgiving before Pink Friday came out. I don't remember when Roman Reloaded came out, but I don't think it was around then. But anyways, it's always a good time at retail. She would obviously sell more. I mean, there are a few weeks during the year that are guaranteed to boost sales, one of them being Thanksgiving, another being Christmas, another being Grammy week after.
She hasn't stated as to why it was pushed back. And even when the press release, it really didn't say as to why. Nor does it really ever, like, unless you're like Wayne and you put out a PSA as you just did.
Right. I'm more surprised that his album's coming before Nicki's.
I feel like that was always, well, when I spoke to Birdman, which is the man that also told me that he once was going to put out like 50 albums.
He did say that.
Yeah. But he said that Wayne would come out before Nicki. But I think it's also because people have been anticipating like this Wayne album, or like we all thought that Wayne was working on this for a minute now. And even though Nikki promoted that she was, it's like when she started saying that, that's when we're like, oh, she's working on an album. I think with Wayne, we kind of thought that before he even started talking about it. So, but no, I'm surprised that Nikki's got pushed back, because she just seemed like she was like ready to go. As far as like what she wanted, when she talked about the album, it looks like she had like an idea of what she wanted, and her look was like, you know, a more natural look. So it was like things were happening. So it was kind of weird. And like you said, most of her albums come out or have came out at like around Thanksgiving. So she has like a certain mark for herself. But I don't know. I'm kind of wondering as to why push it back one more month.
Yeah, maybe it's trying to get the Christmas momentum as well.
That is true.
A lot of pink print albums and stockings.
Did you just daze off and like think about that?
Yeah,
did you imagine that?
You can't see me, obviously, but I just gazed off into the distance.
You did. Are you excited for Wayne's album? For the Carter Five? For a two-part Carter Five album?
That's such like a Hunger Games and Harry Potter movie where they're like, we're going to split the last one into two. Because, you know, Wayne has talked about retiring after Carter Five, which... I think we all know he's not going to.
I don't think really he young. Is. I think the Carter series will end. Yeah.
I'm particularly not excited.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything that's really moved me from Wayne in a while, actually.
Yeah.
Even his verse on the Nicki song, I was kind of like, Drake sounded like he was having fun. Nicki sounded like she was having fun. And then Wayne came third and was like, I don't know.
Well, it was such also a switch in his like verse, because it went from like playing along with the whole wanting to fuck Nikki, and then even joke that she looks or she's acts like she hasn't had good dick. this is gonna be definitely an explicit episode again. And then he like switches and then starts saying something about like, you know, threatening competition, and like, and it's just like, oh, okay, like that was a bit of a switch, but it's almost as if he needed to say that also, as in like that's routine to say something like that on a song, on a rap song, or on your verse. But
right. That's why I was surprised, because he really did veer off, and Drake and Nikki stayed very on topic.
Right. Yeah, it's a little... I'm not that excited for the Carter Five. I feel like I'm not really... like you said, there hasn't been, like, a single that actually, like, has grabbed somebody. Like, I don't know. I think, what was it? Was it Believe Me?
Believe Me was, yeah, it was a
was
single.
That with Drake,
it,
right?
It was with That's Drake, but it felt one? Like a Drake song featuring Lil Wayne.
Yeah. Like, I feel like there's more talk of, like, Drake's loose songs than, like, sadly, a Carter 5 album.
Oh, I mean, in all fairness, the one song that did get me excited for the Carter 5 was Do Say, which I think he didn't release to retail or anything. It was just kind of like a track that he put on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's when he used to, like, release songs or... release, you know, like videos or snippets for the album on Wednesdays. Like,
right.
So I think he put out one of those during that series.
I feel like if he stuck to that, I'd be interested. But it had like a very soulful sound, and a lot of like the Carter 3, which I personally think is his best album.
I love the Carter 3, yeah.
It has a lot of that soulful sound on it.
I feel like he balanced very well like street and mainstream on Carter 3.
Well, yeah, especially. But I mean, you could see... that he's really good at the soul stuff, which
I can't name you a song on Carter 4 or I'm Not a Human Being.
I can name you the interlude featuring Tech N9ne.
I know. You said that once and I stole that, and the next time someone said that, I was like, there's some song with Tech N9ne on it. Never again. I'm lying, because I could not name you that until you told me that one time we were talking, which is sad. So you spoke about the Mary J. Blige, which is one thing you were very excited about. And then we spoke a little bit offline of T-Pain's acoustic set that he did with NPR, which was surprising that people were excited to hear, surprising that they were surprised to hear T-Pain rapping with that autotune. And you said this offline, like he has songs on his albums where there's no autotune and you could clearly hear him singing. So it's not like he's a surprise that he's a talented singer. I think...
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mentioned this to you also offline, where I think the surprise for me was that he kind of like went with the joke and was acted as if he was like a little nervous, and even joked and said that the autotune was already like physically in him. Which I thought was funny, but like, yeah, he's, I've known T-Pain to be like a good singer.
Yeah.
I wish that he would have done this before, so then I guess it would be more obvious, or just do an album with no autotune whatsoever.
Right. I mean, I think T-Pain could definitely pull it off. He definitely is an unpolished singer, like, but he really can hit those runs and notes, and like, I thought that the idea of doing a Tiny Desk segment for NPR, it was brilliant. Like, for an artist like that, whose popularity and, I guess, ubiquitousness... Is that the right word?
We're going to go with it.
Whatever. His presence in hip-hop has been diminished, obviously because of people like Future and Jay-Z, who did the death of autotune, which really hurt him, I think.
Yes, it did. But then, I didn't realize... It didn't occur to me that that's what Future's been doing this whole time, and we kind of gave T-Pain so much shit. I think it was more T-Pain used it more obvious than Future is.
It's definitely way more layered on.
Yeah, and he like really works that autotune into those melodies, or Future does. So that is interesting, though. And then I just wish that T-Pain would have done this a long time ago, so then people wouldn't be as surprised. But at least now people recognize that he sings.
I mean, if he'd done it earlier, he would have gotten more respect.
Right.
Because I feel like people are just like, oh, he just does the same thing over and over again.
Right.
Just in different modes. Well, but maybe this also goes to show that people don't listen to T-Pain albums in their entirety.
Another thing that you wanted to talk about was the Run the Jewels 2 album that just came out.
I definitely...
You just lined up right
if
now.
Not my, my eyes just widened. If not my favorite rap album of the year, definitely at least number 2 spot. That would be next to Freddie Gibbs and Madlib's Pink.
Yeah, that was
which is good so album. Good. But just to go on a little rant about this album, and then I will cease.
Because this is not the place to do that. Go ahead.
I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of the first record, even though I appreciated it. But this record is just so smart, and like it's so smart for such an aggressive album. And you don't really hear a lot of that. Like back in the day, like Public Enemy used to be able to do that, and EPMD to some extent, and their chemistry is just really on point. They feed off of each other. They're both very evolved lyricists, and the things that they say on this record are just like they make you they're just very well constructed in a way that like it doesn't feel like they're trying to be punny or like overly loquacious or whatever for the sake of that. Like they fit their rhymes into these really aggressive industrial beats, and they also do it with a sense of humor. There's one line where LP's like, teabag a piranha tank.
Jesus.
Which is so, that's hilarious. And he just like slips it right into a verse.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, they have great guests.
Shout out to Gangsta Boo and her verse.
Gangsta Boo, it's probably my favorite part of the album because she starts off her verse, she's like, I'm going to tell you a little story. And then she goes into this extremely explicit verse about
absolutely
sleeping with a guy. And it's just, it's immaculate.
My O's kept getting higher as I listened. So I'd be like, oh, like it was, but it was so amazing.
Yeah.
I think they chose the right person to do, to be on that song.
Oh, yeah, sing, for
and
sure.
Like rap that way.
I mean, the only other person I could think of doing that would be Trina.
Yeah. And... but I feel like she has she's a little bit more reserved as compared to how she used to be.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I feel
definitely.
Like Gangsta Boo gives no fucks whatsoever and just like killed that.
Although Trina has collaborated with Killer Mike before. And
yeah.
they actually did this extremely explicit song called Look Back At It. And
you don't have to say no more.
There's a video out there. You can Google it or YouTube it or whatever.
When? What year was that? Like what?
That was on the record where she was biting the bullet on the cover. It had like the pink and black color scheme.
Yes, I remember.
I can't
that.
Remember the name, but yeah. it featured I Got a Thing for You with Keisha Cole on that album. And anyways, the point is Gangsta Boo really adds some the feminine touch to an album that's, and she really kind of matches the kind of
yes.
rough masculinity of the record too.
Yeah, I think that's why she fits so perfectly.
Yeah.
I have been listening to Theopolis London's Vibes album, or at least a stream of it, because he put out a stream. It comes out November 4th, and it's executive produced by Kanye and produced by Leon Wares, which I thought was very interesting. And I spoke to him a little bit about it and kind of how they both played a part. And let's, before we get into what we think of it, let's hear what Theopolis London said about Kanye's contribution to the album.
Not worry about the production side. Man, my first thing for this album was a production meeting. I just went to the studio and listened to beats. Like, man, I'm a creator. Like, I need to create from zero to nothing. I need to create what's in my, I have all these things in my head and I need to make it tangible. You know, so Kanye's executive producer, he's not producing, like I had the whole album produced already. He would have never even helped me if I had a producer. I had an idea. I had all the ideas, everything. He said, okay, I'm gonna just like, you know, if he mentor you, you know, like it's like the mentor, like Professor X me, you know what I'm saying? Like, you have these talents, man. And, you know, he like, you know, like sometimes his head to be like, okay, that first album for him, and his head to be straight in his computer. Like, is this guy even listening? You know, like, but man, he's listening. Like, he has the most sharpest ears in music and picks up on the smallest thing. But I was really happy though. Every once in a while, like, he would bop his head. But I knew it was a good album. And I was like, man, Kanye, you like my music? This is weird. Like, you know, like, I never thought he would like my music. And, so my whole record was really done. And when I came to Kanye, I was just like, hey, you know, all right, here's song one, here's song two, here's song three, that way I see it. And he's like, all right, no, this is the way I see it now. Here's song one, here's song two, here's song three. Change this in song one, change this in song two, change this in song three. I'm going to rap on song four, change this in song five. You know, everything you may put, don't put this song on the album. Don't put this song on the album. I was like, man, I'm going to fight him. Like, no, I want to put this song out. This is why. And he's like, okay. So, you know, so he's like, cool, and accepted to that. He wasn't being like snobby. He really wanted to work on it. It was about no money.
So, Steven, have you listened to Vibes?
Yeah, I kind of gave it a perusal. I kind of yeah. was stuck on Can't Stop, which is the track
Kanye.
That actually features Kanye.
Right.
And there was a snippet of it that leaked, or I guess that they intentionally put out before the record in full ends. I mean, I think he has a really good aesthetic. Like, it's so fitting that he has Dev Hynes, who's Blood Orange, on the last track on the album, because mm-hmm. he's kind of like the hip-hop analog to
Dev Hynes.
To Dev Hynes.
Yeah.
Like, it has a very 80s feel, but kind of embedded in this, like, contemporary context.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it's vibey.
Yeah, it's vibey.
Yeah, you put it on, and it just, like, it sets the mood right.
Right. I was it's something interesting that he said was that also what he said was that his great aunt passed away before he was working on Vibes, or it kind of like stopped the creative process, and then she passed away, and he said that like he kind of felt her spirit kind of tag along after she passed away and kind of sequence and direct pretty much the creative process, where like when he had like any doubts or he didn't know what to like keep on or take off besides Leon Wares and Kanye West, he said that she kind of guided him, which I thought was very interesting. So I thought that was like very, that kind of was like the cherry on the top for me for the project. I really like it. I like that the whole 80s kind of new wave feel. and like his signature kind of alternative R&B sound that he does. So Nas stopped by, well, we spoke about Run the Jewels a little bit earlier, but Nas stopped by the kind of this album release event or celebration, and he previewed This Season, which is a song I assume is on his new project, and it's on a J Dilla beat. And there was some people that were like felt a little weird about it, because apparently it's more of like, why didn't you get on J Dilla beat a long time ago and not why now? But I like the way he, well, at least from the snippet or from the preview, it's not actual like audio MP3, but he sounds like really good on it. So I can't even like hate him on like getting on a J Dilla beat now. But I don't know. What did you think of that little snippet?
I mean, first off, the instrumentals from his 2005 album Donuts. Mm-hmm. It's one of the donuts on there. A lot of rappers since then have hopped on those beats, like Busta right. Rhymes and Talib Kweli did a version of Lightworks, and I think there are a few more out there. But it does feel kind of weird that Nas hopped on a Dilla beat, especially a beat from 2005 that everybody really already knows if you know Dilla. He does sound hungry and invigorated on it, like Nas has for the past few years, and it's good, but it just feels like one of Nas's greatest flaws is his beat choices, mm-hmm. and everybody always talks about how they want him to do a full-length album with DJ Premier, so it just feels kind of weird that he's doing a Dilla beat now,
yeah.
as opposed to doing something with Dilla or, I don't know, even like Madlib before or something like that.
Right.
One of these like Stone's Throw-y kind of producers that you know have really made their mark in hip hop, kind of outside of the mainstream purview.
Yeah, I mean, I do understand all that. I wonder how much is him just having control or giving no fucks since this is his last album on Def Jam and just kind of going with whatever he feels. Not to say that the last album was really good, but I wonder how much that has to do with him choosing this beat or choosing any type of beat now on this album.
Yeah, I mean, him rapping over a Dilla beat is so different than him rapping over a No ID beat.
Right.
Like, yeah, and maybe it's because of his involvement with Mass Appeal that they have kind of a backpacky aesthetic or vibe to them, and he's trying to kind of fit into that context, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe someone at Mass Appeal was like, oh, if you haven't heard the... like Donuts, you should. And he's like, oh yeah, this is how.
I'm sorry, but if he had not heard that album till now, that would, I hope he never admits that in his life.
I would hope that as well. That is speculation. Maybe Nas is the biggest Donuts fan of his, but it just does seem a little like, why now?
Yeah. Speaking of why now, though, I was surprised for him to rap about the ghostwriting allegations. Like, I don't know if you heard the verse where he's just like saying how Jay Electronica didn't write it, and Jay didn't, or Hope didn't write it.
Yeah.
Or something like how he kind of only gets inspiration from Jungle, which, you know, I think Nas fans know. But like, those allegations were like 2012, 2013, I think 2012. So it's like, it was surprising for me for him to bring it up, like, now.
About people ghostwriting for Nas?
Or yeah, just like those. I feel like that touches on those claims that happened or those rumors that happened.
Nas used to ghostwrite for other people.
Right.
Namely Will Smith for getting jiggy with it.
I think he cleared the air. It was just like, I did not write. He said that he was like there with him, but he didn't write anything. And he's just like, you know how things like happen when you... No, you're not falling for that shit.
Let's just have history. Even if it's not true, let history... let the record show, just for our sake, that Nas wrote Getting Jiggy
With It. Oh my god, you're so ridiculous.
I mean...
What if we get a Get Jiggy With It song on this the new Nas album, since apparently Nas is...
Yo, bring back the Jiggy era. Let's do it.
Oh wait, there's a Rick Ross album.
Oh.
There's a second Rick Ross album
coming out. So thanks for listening to The Juice, everyone.
All right, well, we'll talk about... Some people have strong feelings about that. Well, we'll talk about Rick Ross at another time, because clearly you want to shut that down. So thank you again for You're being welcome. A part of this.
Yeah, as always.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan,
turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.